Welcome to CKCU 93.1 FM. You're listening to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Andrew Jaguar.
Seamus Mackenzie Chapman.
And today we're going to be discussing GLBT mental health, which is very exciting. So we're going to kick off with something that's really been in the news a lot recently, which is the reparative and conversion therapy, essentially. Yeah, so the idea that within Ontario, psychologists and psychiatrists, mainly I think it's psychologists, are charging on OHIP reparative therapy, which is the idea of being able to convert somebody from being gay or transgendered. We'll also be talking about the origins of the Velvet Studio and the loss of Jamie Hubley, which actually comes in line with two brand new sponsorships, scholarships at YSB related in Jamie Hubley's name. And we'll be discussing queer mental health as a broad topic. So why is this?
But more specifically, what's going on right now is that there, an Ontario MPP, I can't remember her name right now, is pushing for a bill that would actually make it so that OHIP would not cover charges for conversion therapy, or as it's called, the pray away the gay cure. Really, what it boils down to is she's basically lobbying for the rights of LGBT and trans people to not have to be subjected to this so long as they're minors. So anyone under the age of 18 would be protected by this act. It's called the Affirmation of gender of sexual orientation and gender identity bill. And this NDP MPP is, I'm sorry, there's a lot of acronyms there. NDP MPP is lobbying for something that, to be honest, is very wholesome and very healthy, and surprising to see that OHIP covered these charges previously.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The NDP MPP in question is also the LGBT critic and the first minister in Ontario to actually conduct a gay marriage. She's quite a famous individual and ally here in the LGBT community in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to see that the outdated, you know, laws that we have on the books that we do have to push through and push away from. So it actually quite startled me that it was covered by there she is, actually. I have her name right now. Her name is
Jerry DeNovo.
There we are. Thank you so much. I had it right here. I sent a message to Luke so that I would keep it on my phone, and then it kind of disappeared.
You've got to get a new assistant.
But if only I could afford an assistant. I think I'm the assistant kind of person. It's really interesting to see that these outdated ideas of mental health are actually sticking around even now. I mean, in the Globe and Mail article that was released not too long ago, it was mentioned that, you know, these ideas of sexual health and sexual diversity date back from 1950s. I mean, it's not illegal to be gay. It's not unhealthy to be gay. And in fact, when you think about it, homosexuality was removed from the DSM several years ago, several decades ago at this point.
I mean, it's only really left in the DSM, like gender dysphoria, mm-hmm. It's only really left there as a way of being able to
identify someone's needs for different sexual...
Yeah, and it's mainly just so that you can cover OHIP with therapy and sex surgery, mm-hmm. sex reassignment surgery. Mm-hmm. It's not really used there because nobody really believes that it is a pathological or that it is something that needs to be cured. That kind of idea has long since been
dispelled.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, so that's only really in there anymore in order to kind of, you know, be used as a crutch for medical coverage.
It's a useful tool that people can use in the medical profession, specifically psychologists, I think, to analyze and to best identify the needs of trans youth or gender-neutral youth and see where they fall on a spectrum and how best they can service the youth, which, I mean, yes, it should be in the DSM, but it's not like the stigmatization of homosexuality or transsexuality, transgender, trans asterisk, because it's not stigmatized by the DSM. It's not stigmatized by the psychological and psychiatric communities.
And that's a perfect word that I would just like to touch on, stigma. As you may or may not know, I actually do live with mental illness, and I have a family history of mental illness. For quite a number of years, I was ashamed, and I'm continuously on a daily basis challenged to embrace and share this poorly understood and underfunded illness, mental illness. I mean, thank goodness the days of shock therapy are over. Mm-hmm. I guess what I want to bring to the table is my experience just in the last maybe, since 2009 when I was finally diagnosed with three lovely topics of post-traumatic stress, personal borderline disorder, and depression. It's very interesting because there, as much as... And I want to say this, that I'm not going to bash, but as much as it's wonderful that we have Mental Health Awareness Month, it's great because I think the awareness is out there. Now we have to move to the next point in terms of let's get some action, let's get some things done. And what I mean by that is, for example, it took over 1 year for me to get a psychological assessment from the Royal.
We're going to be talking about some of those barriers in just a few minutes. First of all, I want to put in the NDP LGBTQ critic De Novo's comments. They held a press release a little while ago announcing the launch of this bill. So this is actually some footage from the press release. And it's apparently it's been billed as an historic bill. It is the Affirming Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Act. It's definitely worth checking out. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds. This is MPP De Novo.
Trans, two-spirited, or queer is who one is. To tell a child that who they are is wrong, we consider abusive. What this bill will do will ban the practice of conversion or reparative therapy for any child 18 and under, and will delist it from OHIP for those over 18. I think most Ontarians would be shocked to know that this is paid for by OHIP. It has been condemned, and you will hear about it, and you'll see in your package that it's been condemned by most in the health professions. What's sad is that we're still paying for it as taxpayers in the province of Ontario. So the tragic suicide of Ohio trans teen Leela Alcorn in December, one of the things she said before she took her own life was she said that her parents had rejected her, and then they took her to therapists who rejected her. Her last words were, "Fix society, please." That's what we aim to do this morning.
The bill that is proposed by MPP Sherry De Novo is crucial in helping the mental health and well-being of LGBTQ youth. Like heterosexual and non-transgender youth, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth are healthy individuals.
And I think he's absolutely right there. You know, these are all very much healthy individuals, and the idea that they need to be converted or fixed is almost barbaric It's so out of fashion.
Yes, it's back.
It's being considered abusive by many associations. Anyways, we're going to get right onto this topic in just a few minutes. We're listening to The Hidden Cameras, Kapajugla. And this is one of our four GLBT Can Queer songs we're very excited about. Check us out in just a few minutes on 93.1 FM CKCU.
And stop.
Very excited about that music video, by the way. So,
it feels so good too, to be live and luscious.
Absolutely. That was Capa Jugular by Juggler. Cup Juggler?
Jugular.
There
jugular,
we go.
Like
the
Juggler.
By the hidden cameras.
Oh, dear.
Absolutely. I just want to touch on a big nuance that might be lost from before we move on from the bill that we mentioned a little earlier. Mm-hmm. The bill, I have the wording of the bill here right in front of me. And it says, efforts to change or direct sexual orientation or gender identity, 1.1, despite subsection 1. Any services rendered that seek to change or direct the sexual orientation or gender identity of a patient, including efforts to change or direct the patient's behavior or gender expression, are not insured with services. Now, we've actually worked before with the diversity clinic at CHEO, the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario.
Yes, yes.
The TV show that we're affiliated with, Let's Talk Can Queer, interviewed Dr. Margaret Lawson, who's an endocrinologist, specifically around the topic of hormonal suppression therapy. Now, imagine that you are a 13, 14-year-old individual, and you absolutely, fundamentally believe that you are in the wrong body. You mm-hmm. are physically male, but you...
Biosex male, but meant to be Jolene or Joanna.
Yeah, you very much feel like you're female. What hormone suppression therapy does is essentially put the pause button on puberty, which mm-hmm. mean, you know, if you look at the long-term effects, there were some Scandinavian studies that actually, the first of the kind of looked at the impact of this. And sex reassignment surgeries and transitioning, if you do it prior to puberty from one to the other, they are much better at quote-unquote passing. The psychological impacts are much lower. They're much happier. They're much healthier. There is a minute degree of regret. There's almost no regret at all.
Mm-hmm.
But this therapy is covered under OHIP. Now, hormonal suppression therapy is, in a way, directing a patient's gender behavior, even though it is patient-driven. Yeah.
Well, that's the nuance that I'm thinking. It's a nuance of, is it actually directing a patient's gender, or is it reaffirming their gender by allowing them to pursue and seek out options to be their gender, to live their gender? Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's interesting. We tried to reach the Department of Endocrinology at CHEO. Sadly, it is such a busy department at CHEO that we weren't able to get a hold of anyone.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
this is certainly something that needs to be considered as this bill is pushed through the provincial parliament, that we don't unintentionally want to lose access to some real groundbreaking therapies here
and essential
Ontario.
Services. Yeah,
absolutely. The clinic is truly very innovative, and Dr. Lawson has done some fantastic work there. But we wouldn't want to see that work endangered as a result of this bill. So, fingers crossed that nothing mm-hmm. comes from that. When we get back, we're going to be talking about some other GLBT mental health issues. But before we go to the next song, which is Dirty King by The Clicks, how important is it to have support for transitioning with youth?
Mm. Well, I mean, just colloquially, I serve on the board for a youth organization in Gatineau. And what I can see from the ever-increasing number of youth who are trans and the ever-increasing number of youth who need this kind of support network is... It is fundamental to your sexual identity and yourself that you have a network of support, whether familial or whether you know, social.
It makes such a huge impact. There was an Ontario study that revealed that without familial support, trans were 70% likely to have suicide ideation. Mm-hmm. That drops to only 4% mm-hmm. with familial support.
Yeah, we know just statistically that a third of people who are homeless on the street are LGBT. We know that 30% of suicide attempts are from LGBT people.
Anyways, we'll be right back covering more of this topic in just a few minutes. This is The Click's Dirty King. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Bubby Studio, Ottawa's queer media. We're on, at the moment, we're broadcasting from CKCU 93.1 FM. Oh my gosh.
Andrew's back here.
I just got so excited then that we just kept going. so we're very excited. That was The Click's Dirty King, a fantastic, fantastic Canadian.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic group. Pop music. I was floored. I've been listening to a lot of Riot Girl, so yeah.
Nice.
A lot of dirty lady punk music.
Now, we want to get back to the idea or the topic of GLBT mental health. And you mentioned a little earlier, Seamus, about your experiences around mental health here in Canada and in Ontario in particular. You know, what I want to really drill down on is, how is your sexuality and your mental health, how do they connect? Like, what's the connection there?
Well, I think just because of my age, which I hate to bring up always.
It's not a day over 25.
I'm not a day over 25 either.
Oh, Luke wants more money later. I think your age has a lot to do with it, especially in your youth, because you don't have the experience. Because I am, you know, the 40 plus, I've dealt with my sexual identity, my sexual gender. I've dealt with all of that through my teens, through my younger adulthood. I guess what I want to bring to the table has just been, you know, my experience of trying to prepare someone, because when you're not in your right mind, and I say that in a healthy way, if you, you know, you're depressed and you've got to go through all of these hoops. I mean, just an example, we tried, both Luke and myself tried to get, you know, some guest panelists here. And after 2 and 3 attempts with USB, you know, no one got back to
Youth Services Bureau.
Sorry. Catholic Family Services, who I've used their services, you know, would have liked to have somebody, but again, nobody got back to me. I've received a lot of assistance and help from CMHA, which is the Canadian Mental Health Association. But again, no one is here to talk today. Those are the stumbling blocks when you've got to make, you know, 3 and 4 calls, always saying, hey, have you forgotten about me? I'm interested in that dialectical behavior therapy. You know, you haven't called me back in 3 weeks. And I'm still depressed, and I'm fighting that because they're not calling me back.
I think this is really symptomatic of just kind of like there is such a huge demand for services in Ontario, and just not enough of it to go around. It leads to these waiting lists.
Yeah, my feeling is that it may actually be spurred by the huge demand, by the fact that there's a lot of people who are just vying for these services and they don't have them offered to them. They can't have them offered to them, or they can't afford them if you're lower income.
Mm-hmm. You don't meet the requirements. The first time I, with the Canadian Mental Health Association, wanted to do their dialectical behavior therapy, I didn't meet the criteria. I wasn't with a volunteer organization. I wasn't, in their, you know, the score of 1 to 10. I was only a 6, and I get it. You know, there's 4 people that are a 9 out of 10. So of course they've got to go first. But there's all of that baggage that nobody explains to you, or nobody says, okay, you've got to be prepared for this.
And I mean, it's a learning experience too. Just recognizing that there's so many diverse needs when it comes down to mental health that it's so. I can't imagine what the infrastructural demands would be placed on hospitals and on psychiatric clinics and psychologists just alone.
I want to touch on CAMH you mentioned earlier, which is the Centre Addiction and Mental Health. They've actually been under fire again in the GLBT community. In fact, their gender identity services clinic has stopped accepting new patients. And this centre is mainly around the doctor who is responsible for the clinic. People have likened him to and his methods to doing reparative therapy. And this goes back to the reparative therapy bill. I mean, CAMH said that that's not the intention of the program, and that it's not. It's Dr. Zucker is actually the one that's involved. I mean, but however, you know, it's mentioned here, we're just reading from the Metro News here, and it says, like, in 2008, he wrote that the best practices at CAMH was both, that it was both ethical and possible to direct a young child's gender identity. And they were saying that it's, you know, preferable if they're under 11 and they're more malleable and easier to mold. But if they're over 11, that's too late. That boat was sailed. And it's this entire approach is very, very problematic, and it has led to a lot of trans rights groups really crying foul.
Yeah. I mean, we know just from previous research, from psychological research, that trans youth tend to know what their gender is well before it's instilled into them.
There was a very substantial study in the US that looked at several thousand trans people over a long period of time, and the study was essentially to test whether or not instinctively you're male or female through affiliation, like, mm-hmm. for example, dress girl, sailor boy, and it's about how quickly you respond. And what they found was is that the patterns of behavior in how trans women responded was exactly the same as biological women. Like, it is not, if you had to think of, oh, how would a girl answer or how would a boy answer, there's a delay in how quickly you do these automatic responses. Mm-hmm. However, there was no delay, which led people to believe that it isn't people pretending to be trans, that this is actually an inherent and definitely a
fixed mark of identity.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there is a lot of other consequences to, you know, in terms of statistics, the GLBD community is so much more affected by mental health. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Well, it's probably a number of factors. Now, let's not forget that the GLBT community encompasses a number of different communities, so diverse communities from the Middle East, from Africa. So mental health in countries where LGBT rights and issues may not be as protected or as sacrosanct as they are here in Canada as well. For white North Americans, I mean, it may also be a factor of a very, I don't want to say religious, but maybe religious background, or a Catholic, Roman Protestant, God knows, background.
We don't want to.
I'm not saying it's not
here.
That. I'm not throwing stones in a glass house. I'm very proud to be Catholic.
There's a couple of churches that actually have come out in favor
absolutely.
Of this bill at the provincial level.
Yeah, this is more of a far in the past kind of background check
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Now, Seamus, do you think that some of these mental health things, I mean, people suffering from mental health is, it is what it is. But if you look at rates of homelessness in the GLBT community, rates of under or unemployment, they're all substantially higher. Does this, you think, add to the increase in mental illness within that community?
Absolutely. As an example, when I was diagnosed in 2009 and I had to, you know, step back and take a much more serious approach to getting some therapy and some help, it's devastating because you to go back and say, okay, now I think I'm maintaining, and as soon as ODSP or another organization hears that you're maintaining, they're like, oh, okay, so we can take him off his disability now. There is definitely problems with that, because there's that fear of, okay, oh, they found it. My employer knows that I had a mental history past. We don't want that. We're not going to sign them up here. You're not a good fit here because, you know, you've had some depression.
I mean, that ties to things like health insurance and so on. We're going to be right back in just a few minutes. This is another Can Queer artist. This is Ray Spoon and their song Cowboy.
So I told you where I am.
welcome back to the Velvet Studios, Ottawa's Queer Media, and
we're back.
My name is Luke Smith.
Andrew Jaguar.
Shemai, Seamus McKenzie Chapman.
Absolutely. And we were discussing GLBT mental health. Mm. Now, just before the break, or the song break, I'd mentioned about how, you know, there's a much higher rate of GLBT homelessness, GLBT unemployment, suicide ideation, and I was asking what impact that had on mental health. And Andrew, actually during the break, you flipped that question around
and said
how does mental health affect those increased rates?
Yeah, I would be of the belief that mental health rates would actually have a stronger impact on the on your social cohesion, on your capacity to hold down a job. If you suffer from depression or anxiety, or if you have
a disorder of whatever,
that's the official terminology. If you have a disorder, then there is a higher risk, I'm sure, of suicide, of unemployment, of suicide risks, of unemployment, of underemployment, of homelessness. I mean,
what I want to touch on here, Seamus, is one of the core reasons, I believe, why these are all factors is because within the GLBT community, there is a degree of isolationism. As I mentioned earlier, with the difference between having family support and being trans and not having family support and being trans was a massive leap in suicide ideation. How important is it to have a welcoming and supportive environment?
It's crucial. It's absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't have that support, it's just, you know, another 200-pound weight on your back.
I actually want to touch on, there are two brand new scholarships that have come out through the Youth Services Bureau, named in honor of Jamie Hubley, who very sadly was lost to us, I think it was about 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you too familiar with Jamie Hubley?
Yes.
Yes, but you can go ahead and tell the on-air audience.
Okay, excellent. So, Jamie Hubley suffered from a mental illness, and he was a gay individual, and I believe that he was also being bullied. And he had a blog. He had an online blog with a Tumblr account, for those who are interested. And I believe that he had, if you looked through his Tumblr account, you could see in reverse order it going from absolutely terrible to kind of slightly better and better and better. But in real time, you could see the progress of his mental health really deteriorating quite rapidly through his posts. And you see posts related to suicide ideation. And it was quite difficult to see, like, mm-hmm. as an unconnected viewer, to see that was very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. The reason why I bring this up is because 4 years ago, myself and one of the co-founders of the Velvet Studio, Sebastian Plond, who actually hosting next week's show on chiptunes, we're very excited by that.
Woo!
But he used to when he was a young gay guy, to kind of deal with the isolation, he would go and pretend to be learning to drive. So he'd take the family car and he'd be like, I'm going to go practice driving around at 8 p.m. around the mall after it closes. And what he would actually do is just go in the car and drive around the corner and park. And then he would just turn on the radio, Radio Hamilton, and he would listen to a GLBT radio show for an hour and then drive home. And that was his exposure to the queer community. That's how we learned about what other gay men were doing and thinking. And that's how we learned about resources that were in the city. And that's how we learned about gay culture in a normal way, as opposed to being this sort of othering. And, you know, that really struck us as something that was missing when we lost Jamie Hubley, because there wasn't something like that. Queer media in like television was only just starting to come out about 4 years ago. Glee, I think, was only about, you know, on its way in, and it was, wasn't great.
Yeah, it was just one pocket of the community at that point, and queer television was Queer as Folk and maybe The L Word and a few other shows. So.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we were determined to create a resource for the local community that was missing. And one thing that really drives us, and it drives us to this day, was within a week of Jamie Hubley being lost to us, there was another gentleman in Gatineau called Tanner Moskwill, and his blog had the exact same pattern of behavior. He was being bullied at school. He was being bullied on Twitter and Tumblr, and it was like, you know, it was getting worse and worse and worse. And somebody at some point said, "You should just go in the corner and die." And he said, "I will." And the internet had already reacted to these suicides, and they were like, "Whoa, that is it. That enough is enough."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Internet Army is what they call themselves. And they came around in such support. Websites went up saying, "We love you, Tanner." And, you know, that kind of and Tanner's doing really well now.
I've lost two friends, not close friends, to a suicide in the past 5 years, actually. Two young gay men, younger gay men, who...
And having
these resources is fantastic and important.
Absolutely. You know, Seamus, do you think that having a show like this, which really explores these topics, you know, would you see that as a benefit if you were younger?
Yes.
Now even.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I've gotten really quiet because this is really close to home. You need them.
Absolutely. We're actually going to take a couple of seconds to gather our thoughts here. This next song is another queer Canadian song. This is on Tegan and Sarah's album Heartthrob. But you may not have heard it because this is actually one of their bonus tracks called Guilty as Charged. Be sure to check it out. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with the Velvet Studio.
You were on my mind. Try as I might, I can't seem to lie. Cotton the act.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, on CKCU 93.1 FM. And we've had a very powerful conversation today around mental health.
In the LGBT community.
Yeah, we've looked at quite a bit at reparative therapy and the bill that's coming out in Ontario, the Affirming Gender Identity and Sexual Orientation Bill.
Flip those. Affirming Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Bill.
Either way. tomato.
Tomato.
Flip-flop is always fun.
Oh, dear. That's going on the radio.
Oh, jeez. Now, we're based here in Ottawa, and actually, I'm sure this has kind of hit news across the entire country when Capital Pride declared bankruptcy.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Such a hoopla.
I'm not going to be speaking too much to that, but the new Capital Pride organization, which is forming under the... under the umbrella of the Bank Street BIA to launch it, is actually, it has job offers now on the table. So you can go to Dorothy's Closet or else Capital Pride's Facebook page to look at those job offers. Bilingualism is an asset, but it's not necessary for every job position. Just submit your resume, send it directly to the emails that are written there, and you'll be able to find your potential calling.
Absolutely. And it's really important to get involved in the community and have that kind of engagement. Very, very important. And we are also coming up to International Day of Pink, which is part of Jazz Vision.
April 8th.
Absolutely. Next week we'll be discussing chiptunes. But on April the 2nd, we'll be looking into the International Day of Pink in some more detail. And then you'll be seeing some coverage from that on April 9th. After the event, we'll be doing some interviews on the spot. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you want to mention in terms of the topic of GLBT mental health before we shuffle on?
Go ahead. You've always got something to say.
I can't help but talk. There are always going to be resources that are available to you in the city or outside of the city, whichever services you're looking to find. Do a quick Google search if you can, not just looking up gay, but looking up LGBT services or Senior Pride Center or Jeunesse Idem or what have you, just to find these services.
A great resource is contacting your local community health center because they will definitely have... they will definitely know who in particular to come and talk to, which is very important that you have access to that information. And don't forget that there are numerous crisis lines all over the country. Be sure, if you are in a state of crisis, please call them and have the support that you need.
Thank you, Luke. I was going to mention that the crisis line is very, very helpful and very important. I guess what I'd like to say out there to an individual, if you... are experiencing, you are suffering, or you live with mental illness, is just be persistent. Yes, the resources out there are out there, but be persistent and just keep at it. And hey, call me. I'm on Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, please check out our Facebook page and please like us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Seamus. I tend to forget to actually plug our own stuff. And don't forget to check out thevelvetstudio.ca. Last week, we covered in our online episode transvestitism. So that's strictly speaking cross-dressing, not to be confused or convoluted with transgender. So we very much go into detail about that. That was one of our Wicked Wonder episodes. Actually, I think the next one is looking at the prostate. So that's quite an exciting one. That'll be coming up in April. Plenty to look forward to on that one. Check it out. Also, there's articles on the gallery opening that recently happened here in Ottawa where we discussed the topic of erotic art, which may also be its own episode coming up in May.
And there are going to be a number of different episodes coming up fairly soon. Luke mentioned the Day of the Pink, which I'm very much excited for. I'm looking forward to seeing the gala. I've never been to a gala before. Oh, except, wait, the Governor General's gala. That's probably a little bit illustrious, too.
Absolutely. It was very... very exciting. We are always keen to be involved. Sorry, Andrew was flailing his hands at me and I've lost my trail of thought.
Yes, I was informing him of how much time we have.
Thank you. I'm aware of the time. Please support your local distress centres and resources in no matter wherever you are. And like I said, if you ever need some help, just pick up the phone and dial. I'm sure there's a centre near you. And there's plenty of resources available online. We'll have a couple of the resources local to Ottawa posted along with this episode. And if you need to get in touch with us, drop us a line through the message on Facebook / The Velvet Studio, or follow us on Twitter at Velvet Studio 1. Thank you very much for listening. We've been The Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media.
We are!
Andrew Jaguar.
Seamus Mackenzie Chapman.
And check us out next week where we'll have an entire episode devoted to chiptunes with Sebastian Plante.
And an explanation
as to what the heck that is.
No, I'm just wondering.
Show me.